While practicing the vault in December 2010, Michigan State University senior gymnast Catherine Mahoney was injured during her landing, breaking her C6 vertebrae. Catherine has shown a true competitive spirit after enduring surgery, inpatient rehab, a period of time at home with additional rehab, and now is back at MSU and working to complete her degree in chemical engineering while she continues her rehabilitation. Catherine joins her MSU gymnastics coach Kathy Klagas in this conversation with MSU President Luanna Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. Mahoney talks about her life back at MSU and the Spartan network around her, providing her with support during her courageous journey.
Well, it's great to have both of you here, Kathy Klagas, our head gymnastics coach, along with Catherine Mahoney. It's been quite an experience over the past year, and I've had an opportunity to share some of those moments with you, you know, in Chicago as well as back here at Michigan State. I'm probably going to turn to Kathy first and just kind of introduce our student athlete here and where we're at today.
Okay, this is Catherine Mahoney, and she's a senior here at Michigan State University, a fifth-year senior, and Catherine is back at Michigan State finishing up her degree in chemical engineering, and Catherine is a year and a couple months out from her injury that occurred in December, and to many people's surprise, she returned in August back to school. I think the doctors told her that would not be possible, and she's determined and stubborn and said, oh yeah, I'll be back. And so she's been back for she's in her second semester now, so we're happy to have her around.
One of the things that when people talk about athletics, they talk about, you know, when people graduate and they've stopped competing, there are all these life lessons that you learn from athletics that put you in good stead in corporations. You've heard all of those kinds of things. So what would you say were the one or two sort of things from your background in athletics that really made a difference over the last year for you?
I've been doing gymnastics since I was about three, and it was something that I think a lot of people get into the sport when they're young and then quit after a year or two. And I think one of the truthful things I've said is that I'd never had a desire to quit. And I think that has really stuck with me, especially through the past year. It's just, you know, I can't give up on what I've gone through, and that's definitely been a big help to me.
When you talk about family, I think it's, you know, right at the top of dealing with any type of situation. Can you talk a little bit about how your family has had an impact? I hate just talking about the past year, but maybe throughout your entire life and kind of some of the things that mom and dad mean to you, because I want to see if they kind of fit with what they mean to me.
Yeah, my parents are probably the most supportive parents that you could ask for. They've been there for me all the time, and I mean, especially just through school and gymnastics and taking me to practice and meets, and it's always been just very supportive. And my dad is definitely good at the giving advice. If something's
you
going
think?
Wrong, take a step back, let's look at the situation, and it never seems to be as bad as I think it is. And especially in the past year, just being in Chicago for those 3 months, having them nearby was very key to my success.
One of the moments, Jim Phillips, who is the athletic director at Northwestern, is a good friend, and I know in addition to the student athletes at Michigan State, those at Northwestern have reached out. Mm-hmm. It's really a community. The interaction with our golf team at the championship game down there, I think, is something that folks had an opportunity to see on the Big Ten Network and was inspiring. But are there other, you know, beyond the Michigan State campus, are there other individuals, groups, teams that really have inspired, I guess, what intercollegiate athletics is about, that have reached out to you in any way?
I think it was just the general abundance of people that I heard from that I had never met, people who came to visit me that I had never met, was just very impactful and mm-hmm. surprised, A, how fast the news spreads, but B, how many people are just willing to lend a hand and say, hey, if there's anything you need, let me know. That was overwhelming at times.
I think every day, whether you know this or not, you inspire so many people in positive ways. What inspires you, and what do you hope to accomplish in your life? What's out there on your horizon?
That's a great question. Right now, I'm really just focused on graduating and
getting through statistics.
That and a couple more classes to go. I'm really not sure at this point. I think I was thinking of one direction, and then everything happened and kind of bounced back, and wondering maybe there's something different I should be doing, or kind of interested in spinal cord research and whatnot too. So we'll see. Just going to take it one day at a time for right now.
You know, she was so inspiring to me. The first time she came to the gym, I was nervous, Catherine. I was very nervous about how you were going to respond and what was going to happen. And it was just incredible to me to see you. The first time you came, you just came to my office, and we just sat and chatted for a while. And I thought, okay, that's good. And then the second time you came to the gym, you actually went into the gym. And I thought to myself, this is the first time she's been back since her injury, and how is this going to go? And you know, we just invited her in. She rolled right up onto the Florex mat and started coaching. Get your arms up faster on that double back. You need to be quicker on that. And I just thought, oh, everything is good. Yeah. And it just, I don't even know if you realize you did that, Catherine, but you just kind of jumped right back into the normal mode that you would have been in if you had been in the gym, no matter what. So it was really inspiring to me to see you be able to do that.
Thank you.
What's the biggest surprise coming back to Michigan State?
How big the campus is. Kind of hits you again. But things are just different in terms of the way I do things now, and that took a little bit of getting used to, so having a semester under my belt has helped.
You felt like a freshman again.
I did, yes. And someone actually told me, because I said, coming back will be very different, and they said, you'll probably feel like a freshman again.
Yeah.
And that is very true, especially when I ride the campus buses. I always feel like a freshman again. But yeah, it's just a different looking at things from a different perspective.
You know, so many times you hear the phrase, I know what you're going through. And, you know, I lost my father, and people, until you lose your father, you don't know what that experience is like. You're now in a position to be a resource to individuals, and there will be others, you know, that follow you that are going through similar situations. And you're going to have an opportunity to be the first words they hear, I'm assuming. And, you know, I don't even know if I'm looking for an answer right now to this question, but are you prepared for that, in being that inspirational person to those that find themselves in similar situations, and you are the source of hope for them, and how you'll adapt to that? And did you have anybody that was there for you in that kind of a situation of, I know what you're going through?
Mm-hmm. I think I would look forward to having that experience with someone, just to be able to say, you know, this is where you're at right now, and look how far you can come in a short time. And I think it would mean a lot to me to be able to share that with somebody and to give them hope for what they can do. I can't say that there's a single person in particular, maybe, but I think I've just been fortunate enough to meet a lot of different people and have them share their stories with me and see that how far they've come in a certain amount of time. And definitely recently a lot of people are like, oh, wow, it's only been a year and you're back. And that's always really encouraging to hear when people say that too.
What advice would you have for parents and girls who might be listening to this program about a life in gymnastics?
I'd say gymnastics has given me so many things that I could never have learned elsewhere. 18 years of being on a team with different people and learning how to get along with people and be a leader and to be committed to something almost every day for that long of a time has taught me more than I can imagine.
And shaped you in ways that you still view very, very positively, which I think is, again, for anybody who looks at the risk of life, there are lots of risk in walking across the street. And so I think it is important to emphasize that one, as one looks back, who you are and what you're able to accomplish was in fact because of your experiences as an athlete, in addition to being a great human being and a student. So.
I think her courage and her determination has a lot to do with her gymnastics background. And she has been incredible in terms of this rehab and coming back to school so early. And it's just something that I look at as a lot of those things she learned in gymnastics. These athletes make it look so easy and beautiful that you don't realize that they've fallen many times on that balance beam, and they put hours and hours and hours of repetition into learning one skill. And they're incredible, incredible athletes, and they're their mental toughness is incredible, too. And so I know all of that has helped Catherine.
Now, how's your tennis game coming? Is that?
I actually went last night. It was good. I've been playing basketball. There's a wheelchair basketball class on campus. So that's been fun. I play defense mostly. It's shooting for me. But it's been really a neat experience.
Yeah. When people approach you on campus, I think every individual approaches a person in a wheelchair in different ways. And if you were to share advice there on anything like that, you have 12-year-olds, you have older folks that approach you, and, you know, there's always the wanting to help, the compassion. How have you absorbed some of the different people approaching you in different ways, and how would you advise that be done to someone who may not feel comfortable in that kind of a situation?
I think most people are just kind of, if let's say I'm opening a door and having a hard time, someone will normally step in and let me get that for you. And sometimes it's nice to know that, like, I can do things on my own. Mm-hmm. That's always a good reassurance. But also there's the days where it's great if someone's going to open the door for me. I'm not going to say no to that.
I ask that question because everybody is uniquely different, and as you're trying to teach your, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-old how to behave properly out in the environment, they're always approaching people that are different than them, but that are people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that comes from teaching young kids how to have compassion, how to approach everybody in a humanistic approach in different ways. And I think, you know, words from you can again have very strong messages to individuals, whether it be a person in a wheelchair or a person that just is different.
Let me tie in to something that Catherine said. One of the pieces of advice that a woman who was very instrumental at Michigan State, Judy Gentile, who actually started what is now the Resource Center for Persons with Disabilities, but had various names over time, said that one of the things that she appreciated most, and I'll let you react to this, is being asked.
Right.
And so it's sort of, do you want help with that, or can I be of help? And the capacity to be in control and say yes or no. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it's yes and sometimes it's no, depending on the situation. And it really is, for her, was that capacity to remain in control and not feel as if other people were controlling your lives for you for whatever set of reasons, for compassion or because they didn't see you in a way that recognized your abilities, but only saw, you know, what might be for them personally an enormous problem. Is that would that be pretty good advice from your perspective?
I think that's the best way to put it, is it always feels good to
that's
be asked.
That's why she's the president, not me.
And I think if all of us sort of do that, then it does give, I think, people a sense that they are back in control of their lives.
It's a great.
You know, from a period of rehabilitation where you feel sort of a lot not in control of your life. Is that?
That's very true.
And so you've been sort of clawing back control. And if we can respect that as a community, that, I think, is probably the easiest piece of advice. And that's what I heard you say when you responded to Mark's question.
Mm-hmm. That's a very, very point on. I can't begin to express, again, how quietly but effectively you've changed my life. And I think so many other people. And I also, to you, Kathy, how you led through, an extremely emotional process with a lot of individuals is something to be admired by a lot of people, You know, I think you are who you walk with, and I'm a better person because of the two people who are sitting at the mics today. And your story has changed me dramatically, and I appreciate the opportunity to know you.
Thank you.
I think the best thing about Catherine is that Catherine is still Catherine, and the personality is there, and that dry sense of humor is still there. And I think that's the biggest message, I think, for me was, you know, the first time I saw you after the accident, you were Catherine. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I expected, but you were Catherine. And that every time I have seen you, Catherine, you have put me at ease. And I don't understand that. I'm thinking I'm someone that's supposed to be helping you, and you were the one that helped me every single time I visited you down in Chicago. So thank you.
But I think part of that capacity comes from your parents, the support you've had, mm-hmm. probably sport, and a sense of knowing who you are. Because you can't capture a definition of who you are after any tragedy. You have to carry it into that event. And then have enough strength to hold on to it. But all of the things that happened before really do prepare you for the moment in which all of us may be challenged in ways we don't imagine. And so it's sort of that sense that every day does make a difference. Probably all the practice, all the training, all the times that you've been at each other in the course of the gym to try to find that moment of perfection. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of built the capacity for that moment for Catherine to be Catherine. And so each day we have to sort of work at that so that the capacity to do that is there no matter what happens. And it's a tribute to each of you individually. It's a tribute to your families, and it's a tribute to the gymnastics team, and also, I think, folks at Michigan State who have been part of an extended family.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have been able to be here without all the support that I've had from friends, family, and the entire university. So it's been a blessing.
Yeah. So when you become from a chemical engineer to a biomedical engineer looking at really sophisticated nerve generation techniques, we'll watch your career with great interest.
Okay.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Mahoney and Kathy Klagis talking with Michigan State University President Luanna Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Simon and Hollis talk with Tim Stout.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at MSUtoday.com.
MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
And Tim Stout is talking with Michigan State University President Luanna Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis.
Well, first of all, we'd like to welcome Tim Stout to the show, 42 years in the business. And as I look at that number, I kind of went back and
he started when he was 16.
Yeah. I was reflecting as a second grader growing up in Michigan. Some of the things that happened that year, the passing of Jimi Hendrix, you know, when you started in this business was that year. Annika Sorenstam and Phil Mickelson were both born the year you started in media.
This is depressing already, but I get it. I hear this all the time.
The Beatles were actually disbanded that year, and gas was 36 cents. So you've come a long way.
Yeah, I was in here the other day in this building for a lecture on Monday, and I sat in a class to hear a lecturer who came in to speak. Jeff Genthner was mm-hmm. in here yeah. from Fox, and I came to the lecture and I said, boy, I have this. And this building was not built when I was mm-hmm. in, because I graduated in 71. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it a great deal. And the kids were sharp and they had all their computers and iPads. And I said, I hope they're all have a chance at an opportunity like I got when I left Michigan State, too.
Well, that's the goal. That's the goal, though their world is very different.
Yeah.
So if you were providing advice to those people that you were in that classroom with the lecture, about how they could craft and their career and be viewed as the next Tim Stout, what would it be?
Well, you know, the great thing about Michigan State is there are so many great broad opportunities here. You know, I was journalism in the old Morrill Hall, yeah. I think it was, and, you know, those were rows of typewriters and that kind of thing. But, the land-grant philosophy, and I drove by here and I looked at the sign about the pioneering land-grant school that Michigan State is. The opportunities here are so vast, and not just with a curriculum, because you meet kids from all over the world. And a number of the friends that I made when I graduated here in 71, I still talk with today. And mm-hmm. We're all, like Mark says, we're a little bit older, but, you know, the memories of Michigan State run so deep in a lot of ways. So my advice to them is take advantage of every opportunity that Michigan State affords you in so many different ways, whether that's as an undergraduate or as a graduate, and take advantage of all the curriculums, because it's a marvelous place, and it's still growing, I think, and getting better every single day in so many ways.
That's very kind of you to say that. Now, if you think about did you study in the Quonset huts, too?
No, I did not. They were up, and the TV station was in the Quonset huts across from Jenison. But, you know, they were kind of at the end of their rope at that point. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, then they went, and the Breslin Center went up on top of that. But I remember them well. Yeah, I do remember them. It's a ways back, but I remember them.
What's changed? What's changed, and how fast has that evolution changed? Have you seen where things stayed flat for a long period of time and then just an explosion in how to adapt to reporting?
When I get asked about that all the time, I mean, I say my legacy of 42 years has been able to stay with the technology, because when we started, when I think of old film cameras and film processors and slides and things
we
like that.
We have some around here.
Yeah, because, yeah. I think we still have a few that are laying around too. And now today, you know, the technology changes almost annually, as opposed to what it was decades. Now it's almost annually. When I watched those kids in that hall, I thought, you know, we never had computers and the internet and iPads and all that. And the teaching aids today that you have and the communication aids that you have today are, you know, and keeping up with all that, I mean, you got to be alert. And I've thought over four decades that was the greatest thing, was I was able to reasonably keep up with that. But if you have that educationally today to start with, I look at the young people we have from Michigan State who I've worked with who've come into our business over the years. They're extremely knowledgeable about coming into it. They know the equipment. They know what they're using in terms of the media devices. All they need is the experience and the judgment calls that you get by maybe being a little bit older.
Of the reporting back in the times of Fred Stabley and Nick Vista seemed to be relationship-driven. It seemed to be get a good understanding of what a program's about, what individuals within the program are about. And today, the individuals that attempt to operate that way are up against folks that are bloggers, are tweeters, are reporting news without, in many cases, even having met the individuals of which they're reporting news about. And I got to think that's really a dilemma for individuals that have either grown up or believe in that type of reporting. We've talked about, you know, today with other guests about situations of the poor reporting of Coach Paterno's death and how that impacted media today is. How does that resonate with you at all?
It's extremely difficult. And for the two of you, I would think it's worse than it is for us, because the social media today, I'm still learning about to this day. I mean, I look at our anchors and commercial breaks looking at Facebook and Twitter and tweet. I don't even know what those terms are, frankly, to be totally honest with you on that. My problem with the media today is who is the media and who isn't. Mm-hmm. What is the media and what isn't? What's responsible and what isn't? And, you know, when you have athletes today with all of this stuff and coaches and fans and all of it, and it all gets tossed out there. I'm not sure it isn't a bigger problem for the two of you than it is for us, just simply because you can kind of wade through a little bit of that stuff. But it is a challenge today to figure out what is honorable reporting. And I would think in the educational and the political sector, this has got to even be more damaging. I mean, you could ruin a candidate or you could ruin someone's reputation just by something you put out there, because there's no place to stop it at all.
Right. It continues, and people don't believe in corrections. I mean, if you think about listening to your program, you have an opportunity, because you have a set of listeners and a set of relationships. As stories unfold, you can continue to talk with them. The Tom Izzo story would be an example of that, mm-hmm. Where you felt a responsibility both to check facts but also to continue the thread of the story from day to day. what you have are a number of people who have their moment in the sun where they do their tweet, and then they don't feel any responsibility to follow up the next day and say things have changed.
I can give you a recent example of that. Duffy's wife, Francie, passed away last week, and that was first kind of noted from one social to another. And my thought at the time when I heard it, this is probably accurate, but finding how this is going to become confirmed is going to take some more time in
that.
And I think most people that deal around the media are going to get burned before, the best way to learn how to avoid this is to get burned one time. Mm-hmm. And then you got to figure out a way to avoid this, because the worst mistake you can make, like you suggested, Luann, is to get it wrong. That's the worst mistake you can make, is to get it wrong. Because if you start having a reputation of getting it wrong, and these types of things are out there, I would think for athletic departments today, like if you're hiring coaches or disciplining athletes or making policy changes, it has to be just brutally difficult to try to harness in and rein in what you want out there and what is accurate and what isn't. And then you got to fight it all off and defend it all.
Right. But not only that, if we just take the recent example of Narduzzi, something happens in Texas or some other state where somebody thinks they might be talking with them, and all of a sudden that's on their board.
Right.
People have this capacity to sort through all of that in some sieve and keyword searches. That announcement becomes fact.
In my case, if I don't know who it is, we don't use it.
Right.
What we may do is follow up on it.
Right.
But even that becomes more difficult, because with the social media today, as Mark knows well, you can pass on a news clipping that you saw somewhere that, if other than that social media, you would never know that that newspaper clipping existed. For instance, you mentioned Narduzzi. Had there not been the social media, I'll bet the comments that he made in Canton, Ohio, in a very informal type of setting, which he probably and it always reads a little bit more pronounced. I'll bet you without that getting quoted for the Canton newspaper, never would have got the exposure that it got it, but for the social media. Well, then it came out kind of sounding like this is a real issue, this recruiting thing in the Big Ten. I'll bet you the social media has, and Mark would know this better than me, has probably been hyped up even more, because these guys all have to get along with each other sooner or later, right?
Absolutely. And I think, from an athletic director's perspective, you look back at the history of intercollegiate athletics, and much of our growth is directly related to having relationships with local news agencies, regional news agencies, and national. And now you understand the people that you have those relationships with are being put into situations where their executive directors, their producers, their editors are putting a lot of pressure that when that thing gets out in social media, you better be on the story. You better be the first one to have it out. And that creates a lot of challenges internally for those of us in the business, whether it's pro sports or college athletics, because we do have an allegiance to the way our industry grew up. And we have great value and respect for that. Where we have challenges are when transparency goes to something that's extremely inaccurate, extremely sensationalized, or taken out of context, which it can be done in 140 characters or less many times. So that's kind of an AD's perspective of respecting how we got where we got, and now trying to we're seeing a lot of our friends in the business lose jobs, especially in the print area, because of where this thing has gone to, and it's concerning.
When I think of two people who I try to emulate, frankly, over the years, there's two ways to go. Do you want to be the one that always has the scoop? And this could be in any type of news. Or do you want to be the one, which I do, of having the best accessibility to key figures? J.P. McCarthy could almost be interviewed by anyone, and Larry King could too. They would be criticized because they didn't ask all the hard questions. But I claim you can't have it both ways. If you want accessibility to people, are you reliable in that this is going to be fair and an uplifting experience? And I think there are ways to ask questions that have a little bit less than the positive to them, but to do it in a way that doesn't jump up in gangs. I mean, you must get this all the time. And maybe I don't do that all the time, but I've told Mark many times, my motivation from here on out and for years has been, is he fair with us and someone that we can rely on? Because I think if people think that they can rely on you, they're far more willing to be a part of them than give you and share your expertise with you for your audience.
No, I agree. Let me sort of shift gears a moment. And you've in the way in which you're introduced on TV, in particular as the dean of sports writers, sports broadcasters. What's the best thing about collegiate sports today? And what's the worst from your perspective?
Well, what I think is the best part that the colleges have that no one else has is the tremendous unifying possibilities for people to come together around a common cause that isn't life and death, although it does tend to grow out of that a little bit. I mean, when we're on the road, like at the bowl games or the tournaments, and looking at all those Michigan State people from different backgrounds, different ages, different social levels and that, and they're all kind of there for the same thing. It's an uplifting experience. Mm-hmm. And the pros are different to me from the standpoint that I just think the pros are so business-oriented. I mean, I know the Super Bowl is great and all that, but those who follow the colleges had to have some sort of a passion for the school and their own way in the first place. And I think that transcends itself from the young to old. I mean, once you're around Michigan State, you're around Michigan State for your life. And you want to see it do well in everything. Mm-hmm. You don't want to just see it do well. You want it to do well because that's who you are. That's your personality. I think that's tremendously uplifting about the colleges. The downside to me is the commercialism of it. I mean, I think I'm a huge proponent of John Hanna. I have his book right on my desk, even though it might be a little bit at times outdated because of the generations and that. I used to think that what John Hanna's philosophy was for the mission of athletics is somewhat today the way it should be, but I'm not sure it always is. But I always defend Michigan State on this because I get asked this all the time. When Michigan State raises prices, it has to raise prices. To be in the arena that Michigan State's in to compete, it has to go with what everybody else does. Now, if everybody's changing at the same time the same way, well, then everybody has a fair shot. From the NCAA level on down, I've often thought that there must be a way to rein in the relevance of athletics in comparison to the educational end of it. But on balance, I just think there's such an upside to it because so many people like it. It draws you close to your university. And fairly or unfairly, coaches are in the public eye. And if they represent a university well publicly, as a Tom Izzo does in a lot of different ways, mm-hmm. your university looks good. My late dad always used to tell Tom the few times he'd see him, he said, I'm proud of you not because of those wins. It's because how publicly you represent all of us at Michigan State. And there are others like that, mm-hmm. too, I'm sure.
Well, one of the philosophies, interestingly, I mean, the Big Ten Network has now gotten to be a really big thing. But one of the philosophies was that there would be programs, the Impact on the World one that was done this week that featured one of our faculty members, Amalfitano, and Pompe disease, a very rare children's disease, that there would be a space on the channel at least to say something about the academic mission of the institution in a positive way. Now, I think as the channel becomes more successful as a sports channel, that's going to get squeezed out, unfortunately. But that was part of the purpose, is to try to find a place of balance along the way.
I think they're extremely well done. The Big Ten Network has surprised me a little bit. First of all, any startup venture in this industry, as Mark knows, is so difficult. For them to do what they've done business-wise to me is amazing. I mean, the first year or two, getting all those cables signed up was never going to be easy. But to be able to do what they've done, and I think their production techniques are absolutely top drawer. And you know what I think are well done, Luann and Mark, to me, are their institutional PSAs about each school. I mean, when you see somebody on the Nepal mountain range making an Michigan State or Michigan, right, or in the desert where kids are helping in some kind of a social program, to me, that says it sells to me the image of the Big Ten tremendously, I think.
I think what the aspirations of the athletic directors are, at least, is not to walk away from the academic program, but to refine and get it to a level where Michigan State, Penn State have it, because it's not that the resources aren't necessarily the same at all of the institutions in the Big Ten toward that academic programming. We did a feature on the band.
That was phenomenal. Oh, it was wonderful.
I know we want those stories out, but I think all of us want to find a way where we can ensure that the packaging and the resources are done in a manner that that represents all institutions, because we're all judged by the weakest link.
But I think back to, Tim, your point, it's going to be a struggle, whoever is in the next iteration of the channel, to keep all the academic programming. Mm-hmm. Or the academic-oriented program. Because the more success that the Big Ten has, if the baseball teams are successful, they'll take a little bit more space. Mm-hmm. The people want to watch classic games instead of something about kids in Nepal doing
good. That's
a
lot of time to fill, though, 24-7, 365. And in the off-seasons and that, it's all high def and it's well-produced in that. I hear from these other people around the country, I think there are a lot of conferences that would love to have something like the Big Ten Network doing what this thing's done. Yeah. I give the commissioner and whoever has helped them, all the schools have basically put this thing together. Do they want to do some things differently? Probably. That's the nature of broadcasting. Yeah. But I haven't seen all the schools. I've seen a few of the talk shows on Penn State. Yeah. Illinois had something. And when Michigan State's on there, I'll watch that depending on what. But like you say, they're at a little bit different times, too.
Yeah, you have to DVR them. But the one that was in primetime is really part of the new venture to not have a school program, but a program about a theme and then feature folks from
– like the journey. The journey to basketball.
And to try to do that with students and faculty and some other things so that we're all – together instead of each of us having our half an hour of uneven quality or activity where our alums DVR that hour and don't look at anything else. And so I think it's going to evolve over a period of time. But there are enormous, as you say, commercial challenges to intercollegiate athletics. And I've appreciated, because I think your work with the band and highlighting the band and everything you've done, including on the Saturday morning pregame helps enormously to say there's more to it than simply what happens in the field.
As I've gotten older, I think everybody wants to say they're proud of who they represent. And to me, I want Michigan State to be known for a lot of things that are – and I've often said Michigan State has a lot to brag about. And it's more than just winning in athletics. Now, athletics right now at the university are pretty high. There are a lot, and not just the big sports too. A lot of the other ones, the Olympic sports have done well too. They're good coaches. They like people. They emulate well. They talk well. They're out in the community. They do a lot of things. But academically and educationally, and when Michigan State the endowment went up here the other day and all that, those things are things worth. Those are things worth bragging. People like that. And in my case, the older I get, I just think the more that you have a lot to boast and be proud of your university for a variety of different reasons, so much the better. And with the two of you here, it's easy to say, but the two of you here, this has got to be about as positive a time. And I know there are challenges, too. Paying the bills are challenges. I don't envy what Mark has to go through. I certainly don't envy what you have to go through. And yet Michigan State's quality seems to be getting better through all this, too.
Well, it really, if you take a page out of the John Hanna playbook, it's about people. And I think when Mark was directly involved in the hiring of Mark D'Antonio, actually Tom Izzo was very directly involved. And so it was about there were a lot of people who in the final list who could have done X's and O's really well. There was no question about it. But it was a matter of finding the person we felt would be the right fit for Michigan State and would help to promote that Michigan State set of values and brand, a la the John Hanna book you have on your on your table. And also people who who would like to be here. Not are here on the way to look elsewhere.
Well, and it looks like you've done that. Narduzzi's a classic example. I'll bet Michigan State's got a lot of coaches that would draw the interest of other schools. But I think they're genuine when they say they like being here. They just like being at Michigan State.
And hopefully we'll be able to, if in a case of a guy like Narduzzi, he's destined to be a head coach. And you want people around you who are destined to take greater jobs. Otherwise, you don't have a good team.
No question.
I think as we talk about people, and we talked a little, quite a bit about commercialization and in the support corporate entities provide intercollegiate athletics so that we can continue to be a value back to institutions, which is what all of us are striving to do. Our world gets changed by certain things. EA Sports has kind of changed the landscape a little bit. I think the Pontiac game-changing performance. But the individual who really brought this forward and somebody that I admire is a guy named Tom Stout, who started the Chevrolet player of the game. and had a dramatic impact on ABC Sports. Kind of guided the entire advertising campaign for the Chevrolet division of General Motors for years. And there was a quote he put out as he had a lot to do with the Corvette brand, where he said, "We design cars for 10 to 12-year-olds, and we want every 10 to 12-year-old to have aspirations that that is the car they want to drive." Very much like Tom Izzo says, I coach, or my thought process is always about the 14, 15-year-old, and that's what we need to be in connection with, whether you're the president or the head basketball coach. But if you could talk about your dad for just a minute, I know his impact on your life,
yeah.
but you and I both lost our fathers at the same time, and it was that moment.
Yeah, it was the same time. In fact, I saw Mark soon after. I lost mine in September of 2004. He was on his way north to listen to the Rutgers game. You know, he'd been in struggling health. He was 80. The thing about him that most people – he lived and died for General Motors, and he gave me, frankly, my sister, my brother, and myself, our work ethic today. We're loyal to who you know, where loyalty is an enormous thing. It was with him. But when he would talk about his career, invariably he would always talk about the educational end of it, which started at MIT. It was Indiana University Business School, then MIT, and then Michigan State. He was proud to be the head of the marketing department here. He was proud to help the coaches here. He was proud of people. That's why I say when he was around Tom Izzo, when they didn't talk basketball with him, he told him about the image and how it provided for Michigan State overall. He was close with Duffy, of course, and close with Johnny. I mean, he was here in a lot of the ways, the golden age of Michigan State, but that being that it was after the war years, it was during the boom a little bit. He was here from...
Money was plentiful.
He was, well, it was, you know, he was here from 55 to 69, and then just like an assistant coach, General Motors finally made him an offer he couldn't refuse. But he never gave up his love of Michigan State because he was proud of the many different areas. I'm sure if he went back in that building today where the business school is over here, he'd think, just look where that's come since I was in the days of my office in Epley Center and that. But loyalty was a big thing to him then. He was proud to go tell people. He was from Michigan State, and he wanted to tell that all over the world. But I think that philosophy still exists today. Michigan State, I think, is presented beautifully around the world in many, many different ways. I think that's why there's so much success with it today. Kids want to go here. They want to go here. And you look at the young people that we have at the games and the activities. And all. Kids want to go here. Why wouldn't you? It's a great place.
We both purchased a vehicle in our grief.
We did.
He purchased a red Corvette, and I got a John Deere tractor.
Yeah.
So.
we did. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I remember when Mark lost his dad soon after that, it was tough, too. But a lot of what I think about Michigan State today, frankly, is from the guidance of my dad. Because I went to school here when he taught here, and we'd have lunch once a week between my dorm at McDonald and Epley Center. And we went in the middle one to the graduate hall there and all that. And I enjoyed that. I mean, I enjoyed my days here. And watching those kids back here the other day in that lecture hall, I thought, boy, does this bring back memories. And I think it's tougher for them today. They got to borrow money to get in here. There's no guarantee they're going to have maybe the same opportunities I had. But Michigan State's trying to give them every opportunity they can get.
Well, he was a world-class individual. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you.
It was extraordinary. And his influence is still felt in the halls of Epley.
Thank you. I appreciate that a great deal because he would have too.
And it's also interesting to meet some people who were part of the automobile industry, even for some Toyota and other brands that took his marketing courses and felt his passion for cars.
Well, you know, it's funny, too. One quick story. Back in the days before budgets weren't what they were, when Gus Kanakis was head coach here, they went out and played in a tournament in San Francisco. It's a little different today, and they didn't have any way to get the team here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, right.
So Dad said, I got a dealer out here that can get you four or five cars. And he says, how much? Oh, I don't. We'll handle it. We'll take care of it for you. And he wanted to get some cars for Michigan State so the coaches and the kids can get around. Now, today, obviously, the world has changed a bit. But even then, he thought, you know, I got a chance here to help Michigan State a little bit because budgets were a little tight then and all that. And when I say commercialization, don't misunderstand. Michigan State has to be competitive in everything that it does. His job, as you know, is so challenging. I mean, you know, it's very, if this is the system that we have today, you want to prosper in that system. So when I say that, I'm talking about that as a general model at all. And yet I look at schools like Stanford who do well, Harvard does well. I mean, I think you can be good at a lot of different things. athletics included. And I think Michigan State's reputation is terrific worldwide. At least that's what I hear many ways over.
Well, last night in the pre-event at basketball, I got a question about the four-year scholarships. Mm-hmm. And somebody had done an analysis of all the top football programs and how large their recruiting classes had been over the past few years, which is really a evidence of either people dropping out or getting pushed out in a variety of ways. But they looked at Michigan State, and we had very little of that. And I said, well, you know, when we make a commitment to a kid, we're his future. In the case of football, he is her future. In the case of other sports, and we believe we have a vested interest in their future, not simply what they can do for our future. And if you have that John Hanna philosophy, then you're not as concerned about the four-year scholarship, because we believe that there are ways in which if the student doesn't go to class or doesn't go to the weight room so that they're a health and safety threat to themselves and others, mm-hmm. That there's a way of dealing with that. But by and large, you're committed to people.
Right. I think from my perspective as an AD, I took the approach that there really is not going to be much of a difference, whether it be a one-year grant or a four-year grant. I think out on the fringes of a bell curve, your debate would be between motivational tactics of a coach versus entitlement that may fall upon a student-athlete, but those are very much on the fringes. I really don't see, in my years at Michigan State, we've had student-athletes move on to other institutions. In many cases, a mutual decision between a coach and a student athlete. But in all of those cases that I'm aware of, it has been for non-athletic related situations, which will still be the case in our evaluations.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of student athletes here. They come from different backgrounds, and when one leaves, that's an opportunity for someone else too.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just part of the way, Luana, there are times I got asked the other day, somebody, I don't know how the thing came up, he said, if John Hanna was alive today, what do you think his observation would be at Michigan State? And I said, well, I'm not behind closed doors, so I don't know. But I said, you know what, from the periphery, the campus looks fantastic. There are buildings there that have added. Kids go to school. There are many kids on the events here from the Wharton Center on through the athletics are attended and all that. So from a broad perspective, from where he was with us back in the pre-war years, why wouldn't he be proud of this today?
Right.
I went to school with his son.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a while, but went to school with him, and I was around the family. And when you're growing up, you don't know how big a deal the guy is at the time.
Right.
And then afterward and all that. And I remember after he retired, he'd come back, and when I was young in my career, I had a chance to visit with him a little bit, and he gave me some advice on that, and I never realized till later. I had a son at another college, Hesburgh at Notre Dame. Talked to Hesburgh one day. Hesburgh came and spoke, and he took a question from the kids down at Notre Dame a year ago, and he said, who's the most fascinating person you've ever met in education? And so my son's sitting there not paying much attention. He said, easily, John Hanna at Michigan State. And he called me that day to say, Hesburgh said John Hanna at Michigan State. Hesburgh's met a few people in his life. And I thought, good for Michigan State.
Right. No,
Notre Dame thinks that much of Michigan State.
No, and I think that if I were to think about that, and you look at the John Hanna piece, FRIB is simply an extension of the John Hanna legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people, think about him building football programs, but not building the first cyclotron with Henry Blosser and a bunch of guys in the basement of a old building.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of what we're doing is really taking the same spirit. I think he would be disappointed at the lack of the public covenant to support higher education.
Really?
Because if you think about his abhorrence at raising private dollars, and while UCLA and Michigan, everyone else was actively raising private dollars, he believed that there was this covenant with the state that if we took care of Michigan kids, the state would take care of us. And so we're still, and I think we have done that with our very low, so our percentage of out-of-state students is about what it was in 1960.
Uh-huh.
And where other Big Ten places are at the 30-40% range. And so I think he would be disappointed in that. Now, how he would respond to it, I sometimes wonder.
Well, the challenges are different today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look at the regular school systems that our kids go to now. I mean, my insurance from my wife, who's a teacher, has changed dramatically over the years. Things change.
Yeah.
And while that might be true, would he understand, though, that the challenges you face are obvious, and the one who your successor down the road's going to face, how will they generationally be different than what they are today just because of the natural progression of time? So,
but he sort of counted on that covenant as a way of generating American competitiveness and American prosperity.
Yeah.
And some of the debt issues, some of the other kinds of things are a function of even business leaders coming out and saying that, you know, the state's disinvestment is about $41 million dollars over this course of a period of time. And it's an interesting set of questions.
Again, I think it's we were talking about this earlier on the social media piece. I think it's important as we're sprinting to the finish line of our race that we always go back to the starting block and maybe re-guide some of our thoughts and what we're where our values are and what we're trying to accomplish.
So.
But I think he would like D'Antonio Izzo and Susie Merchant.
I would say yes to that, but I would think that some of the other deans of the schools that are here too academically, and it's amazing because there have been other bright people here from his era too who've helped Michigan State get to this point. I mean, public education is difficult. There are, as you know, there are a lot of things you have to deal with. Maybe some of the private sector does not have to deal with too. I've often, I think more about him because it's my end. And I say to my wife, I said, how does he have to deal with this? And how will he have to deal with that? Because the world, whenever you deal with the public, as you know, there are challenges there. There are some people very understanding, and then there are those you're going to have to convince a little bit.
You get guidance from a lot of people.
A lot
of people.
And I'm sure the social media, you got plenty of suggestions, and you have no problem getting them all the time, too.
Yeah. Well, we really do appreciate you joining us today, but also all that you do for this community, for representing your industry so well and your professionalism and values and for the plugs you give Michigan State.
Well, I appreciate it. The two of you ought to be proud of yourselves, though, because you guys came through this thing. You came up through the ranks. I mean, Mark paid his dues, came up through the ranks. He never knew, my kids today, they want to be Mark Hollis. And how do I do it? And I said, well, the one thing he did was he probably never knew where it was going to go, but every task he had in front of him, he dedicated himself to doing that as well as he could. I said, that's a pretty good example. In your case, you came through the ranks educationally here, never knowing probably up till the bitter end you were going to end up being the president here, and look how it's gone today. It's easy to do it right here in this forum, but you both should be proud of that because these jobs aren't easy, and people are going to criticize you still because of the positions you hold, but I wish you both Godspeed in your ahead if I can help you in any way. And let me say, as a Michigan Stater, I'm proud of the work that both of you have done.
Well,
and I hope you have many more years to do it.
We appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your partnership.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the Dean of Sports Broadcast Journalism in Mid-Michigan, Tim Stout, talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luanna Simon. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
And for more MSU Today, visit us on the web at MSUtoday.com.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.